Welcome to Synthaholics. We're here at Nickel City Con.
2018, baby.
2018. So this year's a little bit different. Instead of a thousand little interviews, we'll have a couple. And then we actually had a panel where we recorded, where we kind of talked about podcasting with some of our friends.
So you can have a tutorial on podcasting if you ever want to get into it.
Yeah, so people asked us questions and we answered them. And we just talked about how we got into podcasting. So this is a little bit different of an episode, but this is what we got this week since we've been at a con all weekend, so this is what you're getting.
And have you been enjoying yourself, Dave?
Yeah, it's been great. The panel with Lori Petty went really well.
Yeah, well, why don't you give him a rundown of how things went for you?
So, yeah, with
it's like Metropolis.
The first day, Friday, I did a panel with Barbara Eden. She was really nice. I Dream of Jeannie, and we had, 30-35 people show up. It wasn't super big, but, it was nice, and, had a lot of questions from the audience, which is good, even though it was small, we had a lot of questions. And then Saturday, had a one with Frank Cho. Unfortunately, only, 9 people showed up to that.
Yeah, he's a great artist, a comic
book
artist. Does some amazing work. Check out Frank Cho.
Yeah, he did a Kickstarter a while back, drawing Beautiful Woman. It's still book he sells. It's absolutely gorgeous. Beautiful art that he does, and he was really fun to talk to. Real nice guy, funny guy.
Right.
And then, like we said, at 4 p.m. yesterday is when we did our podcast panel.
Yep.
With Chris Chavez of
Back Issues Network. Right.
So he's got lots of podcasts. And also Robbie from Nerd Comic Con, and of course Aaron and I.
Longtime friend Robbie Palmer.
Yeah. And then we got questions from the audience and tried to help them out best they could about how to get started with a podcast. So it's a little bit different from a con podcast, but hopefully it'll be fun for you guys to listen to, and we'll be back to more regular stuff. Maybe 2 weeks, because we might be doing a Han Solo.
Oh, right. They're a Han Solo thing.
Han Solo thing, that'll be on probably Hardly Awesome.
Right, podcast. Right, exactly.
So if we don't release next week, it'll be because of that.
Gotcha. Well, just keep tuned for all that. But enjoy Dave's hard work and running around the whole con to get this episode out to you.
Yeah, and there'll be some video coming up on our YouTube channel. So youtube.com/Synthaholics, there'll be some cosplay showcase video. So go check that out.
Sweet.
Woo. It's amazing. Love it.
So you got to see all of Discovery. This is David, and of course I'm here with Jeff.
Jeff, hi.
You've heard him on the show before. He's been a guest a couple of times before on our con episodes usually, but we had you on to talk about
Balance of Terror.
Balance of Terror.
Yeah,
yes.
Great episode. Yes,
fantastic episode. But you've seen all of Discovery,
yes,
and you're the first person I've run into so far that's actually seen all of Discovery.
Oh wow!
So, what are your thoughts overall on the series?
I think it's well written. It's well executed. It's beautiful. I mean, I'm a huge fan of a lot of the cast already. So for me, that's part of why I like it a lot. But the writing is really exciting and it's interesting. And I know that there are a lot of fans that are very critical because they've taken some creative liberties. But honestly, they don't bother me at all. I think it's beautiful. It's beautifully done. And it's fun, and yeah, check it out if you can. It's awesome.
I love the windows on the ship. Everyone's complaining about the windows, but I think it just makes for great cinematography. I love all the times where it zooms in from outside the ship through the window.
I mean, I think in 1965 or 66, when they were filming the pilot, they tried to zoom in. Remember the overhead shot
from the top.
They tried to do that, you know. And really, I think that every time I see those shots, I think to myself, yeah, it's true to the real thing because they tried doing this. And you know, back in the '60s, they did the best that they could with what they had, which was cutting edge then.
Yeah.
But now we can make this a reality and make it look real. And they do it so well on that show. Discovery looks beautiful. It's perfect.
Absolutely. So, do you have any, like, thoughts and aspirations and dreams for season two?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the Enterprise showed up. We've got Christopher Pike. We've got, you know, Spock on the ship, presumably. You know, hopefully we get to meet a little bit more of the crew. I think that the more we get to know about the Enterprise crew back then, the better, because we've only seen like, you know, one or two episodes, right?
Just the cage.
The cage,
you know, I guess,
right.
And then the two-parter of the menagerie.
Right.
But I would love to get learn more about the Pike Spock dynamic.
Yes.
That would be great.
And
we've got Michael and Sarek on Discovery, so that
yes.
would be interesting.
And I think we're going to learn more about Number One. I have a feeling something's going to happen there. So
with Discovery Season Two, there's no captain.
Yes.
Saru's still acting captain.
You're right.
And they said they're going to Vulcan to pick up a captain.
Yep.
Do you have any hopes and dreams of who that captain could be?
They're
going to Vulcan.
I think it would be really cool if it was Number One that they somehow tied into a Spock storyline. Because I feel like those two knew each other. There was probably some connection made. You know, whether or not it's a Vulcan captain, I guess we'll see. But I hope so. I think it's going to be great. I'm so excited to see it and find out.
My hope is that they're going to pick up T'Pol to be captain.
Oh, that'd be sick. It'd be awesome.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
I'd love it. That would be so cool. Yeah.
I would love to see T'Pol come to be captain. Because they're going to Vulcan. I don't know who else. I mean, I guess it could be a new character. But it would just be so fun to get, like, a classic, you know, Enterprise character
and
to show up.
And what I love about Discovery is that they respect Enterprise a lot. You know, and I know a lot of fans don't.
A lot of Enterprise canon.
But I think it's great. And really, of course, so important. But yeah, if she's in it, that'd be sick and awesome. And I love it.
I mean, like, even if it's just a cameo, I'd love to see Jolene Blaylock back as T'Pol. But I think it'd be fun if she got to be the captain of Discovery.
Yeah. I mean, Jolene Blaylock, who wouldn't want to see her again? I mean, she's stunning, but...
Yeah, she's gorgeous, and she did such a good job playing that role.
I kind of feel like she's married to, like, a really successful record producer, so they may need to work to get her back. But, yeah, she's... But, yes, absolutely agree. T'Pol would be amazing to come back. Certainly alive. I mean, why wouldn't she be? Unless something happened.
Spock lived hundreds of years, so why not T'Pol, right?
Yeah, agree. Discovery, though, everyone out there, check it out. It's so worth the watch. Love it. It's really good.
A lot of fun. Did you watch it week to week, or did you binge it?
No, I waited. There were those moments where it was like, it's not actually, like, clicking. Why isn't it loading? Like, but, yeah, I watched every single one of them. The performance problems, hey, man. True Trek fan, I suck it out. It was fun.
Yeah, there's a couple nights where it didn't play right.
It would skip and everything,
I feel like it's a better to binge show because it's just like, oh, you get so frustrated for what's coming next. It's like,
it was every week, it was great. It was awesome. Loved it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for talking to me.
Oh, my God, my pleasure.
Good
always. Always good seeing you.
Thanks.
Enjoy the con.
You too.
Today we're at Nickel City Con, the last day. I'm here with Justin Silverman?
Justin Silverman, that is correct.
Awesome. So yesterday we talked a little bit, and you were saying how you absolutely loved Voyager and hated Deep Space Nine, and I'm the opposite. I always love meeting people who love Voyager because I'm fascinated as to why.
I mean, I can understand, you know, DS9 is literally like a serialized... war show, kind of like watching, like reading like Civil War letters one after the other, you know? It just, like we were talking about yesterday, it's just like one of the first serialized show, especially sci-fi like that. You know, where there's literally 9-part episodes, and if you miss one, you screwed up the whole thing. Voyager was definitely more Monster of the Week, more classic TOS style, where that episode doesn't really have too many consequences. Sometimes it'll, like, they get the mobile emitter, but those are usually... like driving, like episodes that really drive the story in Voyager are usually 2-parters or season finales. So the entrance rate is a lot lower. You can just kind of watch it. It's not a big deal.
Sure. I mean, that's a lot easier watch from episode to episode. But in a show where the concept is you're thrown halfway across the galaxy, there yes. should be more consequences, and there should right. be more week-to-week things every single week.
Because
the ship should start breaking down by the time they get back home. There's no space docks.
Right.
There's no Federation resupply depots.
Right, well, they always say, like, they run into people who are more, have better technology, or they have really good mechanics and all that, and they just keep it going, you know, it's kind of like drive, you know. It definitely doesn't have the, like, not realism, but, like, the grit of DS9. Yeah. Mind you, the first Star Trek series I started watching religiously was Voyager, and I was like a teenager at the time.
Everyone's first.
Everyone likes their first, yeah.
You always love your first. Although, I mean, I technically grew up on TOS because my dad had the tapes.
Yeah.
And I remember looking forward to Next Gen coming on, but I didn't watch DS9 all the way through to later in life, and I fell in love with it because I love the serialized storytelling.
I really want to watch it now. Like I've watched so many YouTube clips of just DS9, and I'm trying to put together this thing with the Cinemassacre guys, the Star Trek in 100, where if you had to watch only 100 episodes of everything Trek, like let's say someone has okay, Star Trek has a really awful, like, gate of entry. Like, you can't just watch something in DS9 because you don't know who the Romulans are. You don't know what's going on with the Klingons. Like, this is the comprehensive. You start at TOS and you end probably at the end of Voyager because we don't want to put Enterprise in it.
No Enterprise.
There's no Enterprise.
No Discovery.
No Discovery. It's pure prime timeline. You know, no BS. Like, just the classic stuff. So, you know, you have, like, 6 episodes of TOS. You throw in only the best movies that make sense. That sort of a thing.
So, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah,
6.
Well, you don't really need 4, even though it's fun.
You need 4? It's like 2, 3, and 4 is a trilogy.
Well,
it's
kind of.
It's the official Star Trek trilogy.
Yeah.
It's like watching Star Wars and Empire, but fuck it.
These are the concepts we need to talk about and why I probably recruit, you guys to help me out with this. Because
I would be more than happy to help you out
with this. We are stumped with DS9 right now. Because Voyager, you just pick the ones that matter and you fill in some good episodes here and there. TNG, you kind of know what the best, like, 40
Tapestry,
are. Yeah, exactly.
Best of both worlds.
But the goal isn't to just make, like, oh, here's the top 100 Star Trek episodes. It's to tell the story of all Star Trek, because sometimes you got to have some bad ones in there. For example, unfortunately, in Voyager, for the episode Scorpion, the work where, they get rid of Kes and they put on 7 and 9,
yes.
You have to have that awful fucking episode with, can we curse? I can curse.
Yeah.
With Chakotay, where he gets Borg implants in his brain in that one episode. Like, he goes to a planet of Borg.
I thought that was later.
No, it was in early season 3, or season 3, yeah.
Oh, I thought that was, like, season 5 or 6
or late season 2, no. So I'm like, shit, now I have to have that fucking episode, because it has to link, or you won't know when he does the Borg thing at the end that it made sense. So we kind of have to rewatch everything, but Star Trek at 100 is a passion project, and it's not a lot of fun. But just like the movies, where it's like, well, you don't need 1, you don't need 5.
The problem with Voyager, there's no real logic to a lot of the stuff that happens, especially with Chakotay. He hated 7 of 9 the entire time, and
yeah.
The only reason they got together was because he dared the producers, like, I haven't had a lover just in a while, hook me up with the hottest babe on the show.
Yeah.
And they did on a dare, and it made no logical sense.
Robert Beltran from Night of the Comet fame. I get it, yeah, but I feel
also
like...
Threshold. What are your thoughts on Threshold?
Threshold. I like the concept of Threshold because I like the Warp 10 thing, but so many other Star Trek things have already done the Warp 10 thing to a degree.
Well,
so,
and, you gotta remember in the last episode of All Good Things, they're cruising at Warp 13.
So right.
It's no biggie.
Yeah, but then they kind of retcon over. They're like, oh, well, that's what they call it. It's actually this. You know, it's like, that's actually Transwarp Stage 3 or, you know, some bullshit like that.
Yeah, but it's also the future. So,
right.
way beyond Voyager.
Right. Oh, that's true.
Because All Good Things, they're, you know, Picard's flashing back and forth
yeah. With something like Threshold, yeah, like... Or Fairhaven, like, Voyager, so I feel like...
Fairhaven's kind of a guilty pleasure. Threshold, yeah. It works until, like, the last 15 minutes. And,
yeah.
Like, are you into horror?
Yeah.
I really think, like, here, let me pitch this idea to you.
Okay.
Like, what if Threshold, what if it wasn't velocity that
yeah.
was making them change? What if those clicky aliens from that one episode of schisms.
Right, schism. Yeah.
What if those guys live in Warp 10 space?
Oh, I see.
And then they like injected him with something that warped him, and then they couldn't. They couldn't catch it until they did something special to see it in the weird Warp 10 space inside of the shuttle. If they would have played up the horror angle instead of doing some like evolutionary mumbo jumbo science,
it was weird.
They could have saved the episode because the episode it works. It's good for the first 30 minutes.
And, you know that the story of Voyagers, which is why we're trying to do the Star Trek at 100 thing, is there's so many. Like, I want to rewatch Voyager, but I don't want to watch a lot of certain episodes. I just want to watch the good stuff. But I think when you boil them all down, Voyager does have a lot of good episodes.
It does.
Year of Hell, like they've done a lot with. They did way more with the Borg than TNG did, in my opinion.
But they nerfed the Borg. Borg are inconsequential in Voyager.
Yeah, kind of.
Like, one ship like just decimated like 30 Borg cubes, and like it took a whole fleet to stop the one at first contact. Like, that's part of my problem with Voyagers. They neutered the Borg. They weren't scary anymore.
That is true. They made them more like, yeah. But then you could go back
they're
and say
weaker than the Klingons in Voyager.
Yeah, you could say that the Borg Queen's just like fucking with them. I guess I don't know. I never really liked the Borg Queen concept ever. I liked when the Borg were just like this fucking like biotech force.
Yeah.
That's like all the same, and it's a problem.
We have babies in a drawer.
Right. It doesn't really work when you have queens. And then they had to say, because of First Contact and all that stuff, now there's multiple queens, and it's like, oh, great.
Well, it's kind of like, you know, like when one dies, the other one rises up or whatever. The Or it's kind of like the Cylon thing. When one dies, the consciousness rises
back
up.
They said, like, that race, I forgot what the Borg Queen race is, even though you're like, the goal is you're supposed to think that it's human.
Well, yeah, there's the Destiny Trilogy, which is, I haven't read many Star Trek books, but I highly recommend it because the Destiny Trilogy actually goes through the origin of the Borg and the demise of the Borg, and it covers, like, from Enterprise to Next Gen. And Deep Space Nine. It covers, like, pretty much the whole gamut.
Yeah. But, you know, then you see things on, like, Memory Alpha and wherever where they're just like, oh, yeah, there's, like, seven Borg Queens at the same time because they're actually controlling Nexus Points. It's like, oh, my God. Please stop. Like, calm down.
Memory Alpha?
Yeah, I think they say it on the wiki.
Huh, because there's Memory Alpha and Memory Beta. I don't remember that anywhere in canon. I wonder where they get that source from.
Yeah.
Beta is non-canon stuff.
It might, you know what? It might have been something they say in the Voyager Elite Force video game, the first-person shooter.
Oh.
They had a lot of weird logs in that as well. I love that game, actually.
I actually never played it.
Oh, it's so good.
Really?
And that's kind of why I got, aside from getting the Voyager, but I was like, it was like season 7 that game comes out. And what's funny, the plot of that game is the same plot as an episode that came out later, The Void.
Oh, yeah.
So it's kind of like, wait, you stole an idea from something you've already done in a video game? That's weird. I don't know. So Voyager has a lot of problems, especially the ending with Endgame. I wish they could do that better. But I love the character. Like, the Doctor is one of my favorite Star Trek characters.
I love the Doctor. The Doctor in 7. And
the Doctor in 7,
and Naomi Wildman. Those are my three favorite characters.
Oh, Wildman? Yeah.
Because, I mean, as a kid, she's not annoying. She's actually a really well-written kid, and she's cute.
Well, the problem, then they stick her with Neelix the whole time, so you have that problem.
I mean, that's
and they go to the Tree of Life.
But she also likes hanging out with 7.
Yeah, that's true.
So
they also had like the creepy clown episode. They had a lot. Voyager had a lot of problems, but like at least they were doing something fun with it. Every episode of DS9 was like, who's gonna murder who? It's really like, it's kind of frightening. I've been getting
too
into it.
Dark and depressing.
I've been getting into it, but I don't feel like watching it from the start because I love O'Brien. I love Worf.
O'Brien's great. Deep Space. I will give you Deep Space seasons 1 and 2 are some of the hardest to watch. Somewhere I've got like a way to purge a lot of the first two seasons.
I kind of feel like the first two seasons of every Star Trek series, aside from TOS, which is the opposite, are really good. they kind of have a problem finding the ground. Where, you know, we're talking about something like the Orville. They started out hard out the gate really well because they're just ripping off TNG and TOS and
TOS,
all that stuff.
They're ripping off like the TNG crew down to the point we've got the African American pilot who becomes an engineer. I'm like,
right.
You're not even trying to hide the fact that you're copying Next Gen.
I appreciate that Seth MacFarlane's a big Star Trek fan, and he was like, I want to make a new show, but they're like, yeah, okay, well, you can't unless it's a comedy, because you're the funny Family Guy guy. So he's like, okay, it's a Star Trek comedy, but then it's like, not when you actually watch it, it's just Star Trek.
Yeah.
Because Star Trek has the same humor, it's whatever. So,
sure.
But the thing is, I'd rather have that than Discovery, because I thought Discovery, when they were hinting at it originally, was going to be a, I don't know, like every season is a different era on the ship.
That's what they originally
like anthology.
They pitched it as an anthology, but then CBS was like, nah, that's too risky.
It'd be cool if it started like during the timeline of Star Trek VI, the movie, and went past Nemesis and got past Voyager and
that
all
would
that.
Be great, I'd love to see.
And what's cool is some of the characters could like you could have a Vulcan on it that's been on it the whole time because he's like 300 years old.
Exactly.
That would have been cool.
There's lots of cool ways they could have done it. I was really disappointed with the direction they took.
It's Star Trek.
They pitched it as a Klingon war, and then it was really all about the Mirror Universe.
It's sci-fi Game of Thrones, if that makes sense.
Which I don't mind. I just wish they didn't do the Mirror Universe in season one. I wish they could have just focused on the Klingon war and had that. But they go to the Mirror Universe. And yeah. They skip 9 months in the future. And they skip all the Klingon war and they wrap it up in the most unsatisfying way possible.
I actually never liked the Mirror Universe stuff from TOS. As much as I appreciate Spock with facial hair, I don't know. It just didn't really stick with me. And now that they're doing it again, I'm like, ah.
Well, I would recommend skipping the DS9 Mirror. There's like six of them in Deep Space Nine. So I would recommend skipping those for your 100 because they're all inconsequential.
Yeah.
I mean, they all build on each other, but don't mention one, you don't have to mention the other ones.
I really appreciate when they do like the alternative history stuff, like the Voyager episode where Living Witness, where the Doctor is on the planet trying to explain what happened with Voyager.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like the warship Voyager, and Janeway's like shooting people in the head and stuff.
People.
Yeah, I'm like, wow.
Great.
Like, I like when they do stuff like that with Star Trek.
Poignant.
Yeah, and Discovery, I don't know. Like the first episode, I was like, ugh. I love how the Klingons are in general, especially in DS9. They're, like, perfect. And just how they did them wrong in Discovery kind of sucks.
I'm hoping what they did in Discovery is that they, because in Enterprise, they had the human augment virus that took away their ridges.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe I'm hoping what they did was they tried to re-engineer to dial back the evolutionary clock on Klingons. So you have hyper Klingons,
okay.
Which is what we see in Discovery.
So, yeah.
That way they can breed out the smooth forehead thing.
It's kind of like the Super Mario Brothers movie where they're de-evolutionizing and they're Goombas now.
That's kind of my thought, because that way
it sucks having to explain their budget and financial and just awful awful producing decisions that you have to go from regular Klingons to smooth head Klingons to back in the day dinosaur Klingons to like ritual tribal
it's absolutely crazy. But I'm hoping that they'll explain it out, because I really wanted to see a smooth head Klingon, because that's correct for the time period. I wanted to see a Klingon with hair.
First off, I'm really against the JJ verse Star Wars movies.
Star
Trek, sorry. Yeah. I don't know why.
You know why
I said Star Wars? Because the JJ Abrams Star Trek movies are Star Wars. Like, Star Trek 2009 was his letter to Disney, please let me do Star Wars. Because it is.
Pretty much.
Because Star Trek 2009 and Into Darkness, I would say, aren't science fiction, they're science fantasy. It's like pew pew, let's do it.
But Star Trek movies always had to play up more the action.
Especially than
thinking science fiction. I mean, because they failed horribly with motion picture when they tried to do a thinking man's sci-fi movie.
And Star Trek V, I don't know.
And then, Wrath of Khan got way more action-y.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess 3 and 4 weren't so much.
I find Wrath of Khan to be a little overrated, even though it's one of the better movies. Like, Star Trek VI is my favorite movie.
It's my personal favorite,
It's
too.
The political, the Klingon, you have the whole thing. It's really good. But yeah, like just the JJ verse, and I mean, like we make fun of, like okay, so the Orville takes that stuff and does something with it, and you're like, okay, they did it, but it's fine. But when you take something like Into Darkness, which is just Wrath of Khan, but it's different.
Oh, Wrath of Khan, but we juxtapose Kirk and Spock.
Yeah, it's awful.
And then we resurrect Kirk immediately, so there's no consequences.
But what sucks is Beyond was actually really good.
Beyond was fantastic.
The thing is, why couldn't I get Star Trek 2009 instead of dragging the Prime timeline and old Spock and all this shit into it? Why couldn't I just get a fresh TOS thing or like a miniseries or something? Instead, I got this movie I just can't stand watching, and I'm in the theater like, oh, I guess nothing matters because it's a new timeline. Like, fuck Voyager and everyone else, I guess. I mean, I don't know.
Well, they had to because of the Paramount CBS split.
I know. Well, it sucks when, much like with Marvel and X-Men and Spider-Man and all that stuff, it sucks when the companies get in the way of the fans and what the true content is. And Star Trek's had that done too many times.
Well, and the thing is, they were supposed to get back together. CBS and Paramount were supposed to get back together. There was talks, but then now there's something new that's come up where I think, they're suing each other for something, and they may not be able to get back together. I'm like, come on, guys. Star Trek needs to be under one roof again.
Yeah. So any other questions, queries?
No, I just love it when people love Voyager.
Love Voyager.
I love to kind of like pick their brain, like what they think about it.
I just like the cast. I like the ship. I like all the new aliens because they had to invent all these new aliens. Like
even the Kazon. Come on, the Kazon are kind of hard to enjoy.
The Kazon, which are clearly a reference to like Arabic, like backwoods country, like kind of thing. Like
no, they were supposed to be like the post-apocalyptic skater kids.
Oh, really? Because
that was the concept. But they couldn't catch. They didn't catch.
I saw them as like Taliban tribal war kind of shit.
That's really funny. But they were from what I read on Memory Alpha, they were supposed to be like the skater kids, and like you've seen the Futurama episode where Fry wakes up and he thinks it's the future. The kids of ruling the world. That's what the Kazon were supposed to be. They're just like kids who just found technology and they just stole it and stuff like that. But they didn't cast any kids for whatever reason, and they gave them this horrible rock hair.
Yeah, it's kind of tough with them and the Ocampo and all that. But you know, I like I thought the Vidians were really cool with medical tech.
The
that
phage.
Was a good one. Yeah, the phage stuff was really good. I'm trying to think what other planets. Even though it was kind of stupid, I did like the fucking dinosaur people. I thought they were
alright. That was a great episode.
It was creative, and that's a Chakotay episode. That's okay.
Not bad.
Yeah, because he's not like the bones of my ancestors. It's actually
I'm
like
far away from the boners of my people.
Yeah, the boners. I'm trying to think of other Voyager. I love the Hirogen. I think they're cool as shit. The Nazi episode was awesome.
Yeah, that two-parter.
It's probably the best Nazi episode of Star Trek. There's several.
And they always do Nazi episodes of Star Trek.
Yeah.
Waiting for the do in Discovery.
I like, even though it's kind of dumb, I do like the Captain Proton stuff.
Captain Proton's fun. Even in the that Destiny trilogy I was telling you about, they bring up Captain Proton.
Oh, do they?
Yeah. Because some humans get stuck on this planet and they're bored, so they write their own Captain Proton stories.
The Malons are cool. Like every race had like a thing.
I can't remember the Blink of an Eye.
Blink of the Eye is one of the best. Blink of an Eye, which is literally a Orville episode as well. They do that as well. Where the I forgot his name. The robot guy goes down on the planet and stays there for hundreds of years, just like the Doctor in Voyager. Where he like had a family. And he's been there for like seven generations. Blink of an Eye is great.
I love that episode so much. It's so great Star Trek. But it's also like if Janeway didn't put her nose in everything, they could have gotten home.
Yeah, there's coffee in that nebula, man.
It's just the one thing about Janeway. It's like the plot of Voyager is to get home, but every single episode, she's like, oh, let's go look at that. Let's go look at that. And
yeah. Janeway's weird, especially, or Kate Mulgrew in general. Cause
she's a great actress. I don't blame her. I blame the writers not understanding how to write for a woman.
I didn't realize she played Mrs. Columbo in that TV show back in the day, where she's Columbo's wife, who was like a spinoff show. It's weird
that.
To watch because it looks like Janeway because it's like in the late 80s.
Nice.
And now she's like red in
Orange
and New Black, and that's really weird to see her. And she was on that like fake NCIS show or whatever on Adult Swim. It was kind of weird. But no, I don't know. Like, I really appreciate. I think the biggest robbery in history is that Voyager doesn't have a movie. And because I wish there was an actual movie in theaters
to wrap
instead of Endgame. You got this.
Endgame was just lame. It's just fireworks, and then what? That's it.
Yeah.
I was so disappointed with that.
That was bad. And
I would have loved for them to get home a season early and have like a season of aftermath. But what do they do with the Doctor? What do they do with Seven of Nine?
Well, yeah, what I would have done is they do get home, but they brought all their problems with them because now the Borg are literally taking over Earth and all that kind of stuff. I'm like, that would have been cool. And then they stop it, but
that would have been great. It's a double front. You've got the Dominion War and the Borg at your doorstep again. That would be. So many missed opportunities with Voyager. I think that's probably why I'm hardest on it. Because it has got so much opportunity, and I don't think they took it.
Right.
Well, thank you so much, Justin.
No problem.
It was really fun talking to you.
Thank you, David. I love the Synthaholics. It's a clever name. I get it. Ha 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 ha.
Yes.
The
original name was supposed to be the Drunken Incident. I'm like,
yeah.
We could simplify that.
Yeah.
Although no one knows how to spell Synthaholics, so we might have made it more complicated.
Yeah. Oh. Never, never going to get interrupted by this. All right, man. Good one. Have a good one.
Good talking to you. Thank you.
Bye.
Hey, I'm here at Nickel City Con with James Rolfe.
Hey, how you doing?
He's also known as the Angry Video Game Nerd for those who follow him on YouTube and social media and whatnot.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Well, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I love meeting people at cons, especially if you've done Star Trek. I didn't see your Star Trek episode until after the con last year.
Oh, cool.
So I was like, I'm a Star Trek fan, so I was like, I wanted to talk with you a little bit about Star Trek to get your thoughts and everything on it because...
Because
I loved your Star Trek episode of Angry Video Game Nerd.
Thanks.
I just love meeting other Star Trek fans and getting their thoughts and stuff like that.
Oh, okay.
And then you said you hadn't seen all the series yet, but of the ones you've seen, what's your favorite so far?
Let's see. Well, from what I've seen, the original Next Generation and then the all the movies. I think my favorite, really, of the shows anyway, it's really hard to say, but I tend to like Next Generation the most. That's kind of like, because that's the one that was on TV when I was a kid. And
growing up.
Yeah, my dad was watching that. And, like, I remember so vividly, like, the cliffhanger at the end of Best of Both Worlds, Part 1. And I remember as soon as you see Picard as the Borg and then it goes to black, says to be continued, I remember my dad was just like, what the fuck? And I was like, never seen him get excited like that. And I'm like, well, and I didn't even understand the concept of a cliffhanger then. I'm like, wait a minute. So when do we see the rest? Like, what happens? And he's like, no, now we have to wait. I'm like, what, really? Like, what's going to happen? And then it was just this.
Your first experience with the cliffhanger?
Pretty much. I think so. I don't remember ever. Well, I mean, I watched Transformers as a kid. There was always, like cliffhangers with that.
But I'm dying.
Yeah, but nothing like.
Spoilers.
Yeah, well, the movie, the Transformers movie.
Yeah.
But, like, a lot of times, like, Prime will be in danger, and then it's, like, to be continued. But it always, it's, like, next week or whatever.
So like Batman, 66 Batman, he was always in danger.
Same bat time, same bat channel.
Yeah.
I used to watch that, too. But with that, the Best of Both Worlds, I think it was just because there was a longer gap before.
Between seasons.
Yeah, and to do it at the end of season, that was the first time I saw... Like an end of season cliffhanger, I guess.
Oh, as it was coming on.
As it was coming on,
where you had to do the wait.
Yeah, where you had to do the wait. Exactly.
Yeah. Fathom Events a couple of years ago when they were doing the Blu-ray releases, they released Best of Both Worlds in the movie theater as a 2-hour movie.
That's cool.
Did you get to see that?
No. That sounds awesome, though.
It was awesome, except that it takes the balls out of the cliffhanger.
Okay, it makes
totally
sense.
It totally kills it, because, like, you got the musical score.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's swelling, and like, da-da-da-da, fire, black screen. And you're waiting. But the music transitions changed.
Oh.
It just goes fire.
Oh, so they made it seamless.
They made it seamless. So there's that music is gone.
Oh, that.
It goes fire, and then nothing happens.
Oh, that sucks. Yeah, I can see that.
Cool as it was watching it in the movie theater as one giant movie, the tension of that scene just melted away, not having to like, wait for the next episode to play.
Wow.
Because you don't have that music crescendo.
Wow.
It's really funny. Like, if you can find that as a one piece, like, watch it and just be like...
Just to see,
Or just fast forward to that point.
Yeah, yeah. Wow.
I thought it would have been fun if they would have edited together the beginning of Deep Space Nine, because Deep Space Nine actually opens up on the Battle of Worlds 359, which happens right before Riker fires on Picard.
Okay.
And there's a battle there. So I thought it would be cool if they would have edited that in just to give it a little bit more continuity between all the things that were happening.
That's interesting. Okay.
A Star Trek nerd.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. Boy. That's
so
a shame that they did not. Yeah, it's really a shame that somebody didn't look that over closer and be like, we should really, do something to make this still feel right. Not to take the balls out of that cliffhanger.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's just funny that I was like, no. Because it's a dud. Because you're scared Picard's going to die, and then at the beginning of the episode, it didn't work. Oh, thank goodness, Picard's going to be okay. But just watching it together, it's just like,
Yeah, I've seen a lot of the movies in the theaters with my dad. It would always be, it used to be like a tradition, like every time a new Star Trek movie came out, that was like the only time we ever like went to the theater.
What was the first one, do you remember?
With him in the theater, it was actually Generations. And then we saw First Contact and Insurrection. And I think that was the last one. It was just those three.
Okay. Yeah, I remember, like, this is like on the cusp of my remembrance, but I remember seeing Star Trek 4 in the theater with my dad. Like, just barely. And then he took me to see all the other ones.
Oh, wow.
Growing up, because he was a Star Trek fan. And
most of the other ones were rentals, like, from the videos,
Good stuff.
Yeah.
What was your favorite movie?
You know what? I think for that reason, Generations, probably. And I don't know, it doesn't. It seems one that's most people don't tend to speak very highly of, but I've always liked Generations. I like the... I mean, I understand people's gripes with it, but I really like the scenes with Kirk and Picard, and I don't know, I really just like the passing of the torch. It's cool.
Yeah, they did a good job, and I love Malcolm McDowell as a bad guy.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
I just wish it was a better film for Malcolm McDowell to be in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, yeah, it's definitely had its fun moments, and I would have to say First Contact's probably my favorite. I love the Borg, and it's a pretty confident movie.
Oh, yeah, First Contact is pretty consistent. Yeah, I think, how did I feel about that one? I mean, I really loved that when I saw it. I was trying to think about it. I had, like, some feeling. It kind of felt like a little more of like an action movie, where, like, a lot of them... I don't know. It kind of felt a little bit like similar to a lot of other movies that were coming out, where Star Trek was always kind of like this alternate science fiction. I always felt like it's not like it's not a very poppy science fiction. It's kind of like it's more of a like an intellectual
thinking science fiction, or like I like to describe it as like science fiction, Aesop's Fables, where it's like there's a message.
Yeah.
They're trying to teach you something. It's not just turning your brain off like Star Wars.
Yeah. And even though I really liked First Contact, and I like the, just how well made and how consistent it is, but I felt like I didn't get a lot of that out of it, like the fable kind of stuff.
No. But that's more for the TV show.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, it was like, episodes like, one with the genderless person, I can't remember the name of the episode that Riker falls in love with, and
thing
where they're trying to reassign her back. You know, it's like
early
like pro homosexual type thing on that.
Yeah, episode. Yeah, it's a lot of really good ideas. It's a smart show. It just has just a lot of really good messages and stuff.
And then original series City on the Edge of Forever. To get to like sacrifice things to save the future. You know, it's just like. She lives, Nazis are going to rule. It's like, the Nazis win. But, they do have, like, lots of thinking moral issues, blackface left and right. About racism and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But they're always trying to, like, push that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for speaking with me.
Sure. Yeah,
really
absolutely.
Nice meeting you.
Okay, yep. Take care.
So we're here at Nickel City Con. I'm with Kate.
Hello, everybody.
Kate's awesome. She Supermanned me. And meaning, like, she took off glasses and I didn't recognize her.
Pretty much. It was my Superman to Clark Kent moment without glasses, but I do my magical girl change.
Yeah, it was like from a really awesome, like, medieval-style dress to, like, normies.
Yeah,
like,
I call them my civvies.
And then I totally was talking to her on the street, and I had no idea it was her. It was amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had to clue you in on the mystery. I revealed my secret identity.
Well, thank you for not being like Superman and never telling anybody. But we were talking about Star Trek.
Definitely.
So we came across each other at one of the other vendors, and didn't talk about Star Trek then, but I came over with one of the other vendors. Yeah. We were talking Star Trek, and then you got it. It was awesome.
It's always been an important part of my life.
Did you grow up with it?
Oh, definitely. For us, every Saturday night, it was the family event to sit down to watch the newest episode of The Next Generation. And, it's always going to have a special place in my heart, and it's influenced so many parts of my life. It's ridiculous to discover those parts of my life that were influenced by Star Trek. Like, I can look back on it. Like, Star Trek taught me how to use the internet properly. Like, if the computer doesn't give you the right answer the first time, try rewording it a little bit.
Alternate your query.
Yes, exactly. Google search is my friend now because of Star Trek.
That's awesome. So, you were asking me who my favorite captain was, because you were saying your favorite captain.
Yeah.
I said Lorca, and you looked at me like I was crazy.
Yeah.
That means you need to watch
I'm a little
Discovery.
Bit out of the loop. I'm a little bit out of the loop. I've moved into the realm of fairies, mostly, with my work these days, and I haven't been able to dedicate as much time to space adventures. there's only so many hours in the day.
Tell us about your booth.
Well, I make fantasy jewelry. My main item that I always am going to be making are clip-on elf ears.
They look amazing. amazing.
I do them in
so pretty
everyday wear, and I also do them in tall and fancy night out on the town.
Do Vulcan ears?
I do. I've actually sold to a few Vulcans before. There's
awesome.
Folks out there that can't wear the latex elf ears, yeah. So they come to me for a jewelry version, and they get to have their elf ears in whatever color really works for their rank in the fleet.
Have you made them with the Etic?
I have not yet.
That would be cool, because it'd be the pointy ear, then you have the Etic in the middle of it.
I would like to.
Cool.
I mean, when I get a spare moment, you know, it's the demand for the elf ears is quite strong these days. So
the elf is strong with this one.
It is, definitely.
So who's your favorite captain?
Jean-Luc Picard. He will always be my captain. Patrick Stewart is my spirit animal.
Yes.
But yeah. Definitely.
Gonna marry someone 40 years younger than you?
Already married.
Later.
Later in life, I'm
yeah.
sure.
Yeah. Because I'm sure he married someone closer to his age before.
My second spouse.
Yes.
Well, I have to
be like 40 years younger, like he's doing. More power to him.
Yeah.
I mean,
he'll be young at heart forever.
Oh.
I don't think he ages, actually.
No, he looks pretty much the same.
Yeah, exactly the same.
He looks great.
the most
ageless.
Professional bald actor ever. He is the quintessential bald actor, and I love him for it, and everybody else should strive to be that perfectly bald, you know.
Yes, I have a problem with that. I have too much hair.
Uh-oh.
I hope I don't go bald. I like my hair long.
Excellent.
So would Next Gen be your favorite series since he's your favorite captain? Or do you like another series even though...
All the way, it's Next Generation. I'm one of those. I mean, I've watched quite a bit of other series. Unfortunately, not all of them, as you've already pointed out. but yeah, no, Next Generation is the one that I've watched way too many times, and I've subjected my child to it, and anybody else who comes anywhere near my television, or if I'm just working in my shop, I could
they
put that on. Yes, they will. And if they don't like it, then they can just move along.
Move along home. That's a Deep Space Nine episode. It's not very good, though.
Excellent.
Awesome. But yeah, your booth here is beautiful. Your
Thank
stuff is
you.
Great. I hope you had a great time at Nickel City Con.
I've had an amazing time.
We are wrapping up on the last day. So.
Yep. It's getting down to the last few minutes and waiting to see if anybody rolls through and can't live without a crown and matching pair of elf ears.
Sounds good. Well, I'll let you get to it. Thank you so much for talking with me.
Yeah, I had a great time. It was great meeting you as
great
well.
Great meeting you, too. I've been down here every day to say hi.
Awesome.
Right, thanks. Take care.
You, too.
Now we can be alone.
Intimate setting.
It's no private.
You're all trapped.
I'm stuck in here with them.
So this is the podcast panel. We all do podcasting. Mm-hmm. Dave and I do Synthaholics. Robbie does Nerdynomicon. Mm-hmm. And then Chris
does a million.
Yeah,
I do a bunch. Yeah.
He's got what, like
four or
seven?
Five. I do, there's maybe four that I'm on, and I produce nine of them.
Can you name them all?
Good Lord. Hardly Awesome Podcast, Hardly Kayfabe, Abnormal Times, History Creeps. Then I produce You Break It, You Pot It, Retro Blist, Cellar Dwellers, Vinyl Divers, and The Dusty Finish.
How are you here?
Yeah, those shows are going out late this week.
So we just wanted to get through, do a panel, and just kind of discuss what we do, the kind of shows we do, the kind of content we produce, and I wanted to do it more like open for the audience, like if you've got any questions about podcasting in general, starting your own podcast, things like that. I was hoping it'd be more of a interactive type experience versus just us talking
monologue.
For 45 minutes. Yes. So,
because God knows we can all monologue.
Yes.
We're podcasters. We talk.
Ad nauseum, whether you want us to or not.
Yeah, basically.
So, Synthaholics, we started about 3 years ago. We're a Star Trek mostly podcast. We have branched into the other things. Part of the reason we all know each other is through the convention circuit. A couple more people coming in.
Hello.
Right behind you. So,
Podcasting?
Yeah.
We're doing podcast.
Welcome.
So, for those who just come in, Aaron and I, or I'm David, we just set the Holics. Robbie does Nerdonomicon, and Chris does 100.
He's not renaming it.
He does quite a few.
We're recording, so you can listen to it on Set the Holic later next week. So we all met actually through the convention, except for Aaron and I. We met Robbie and Palmer at two separate conventions, and we've actually done whole group podcast sessions, which we've called the Nerds of the Roundtable. We all get together once or twice a year and do bigger things that...
big events.
Bigger events, yeah. Like, so we did the Star Wars episode 7, 8... as a big group, mm-hmm. and that's been a lot of fun to do that. We take Star Trek very, not too seriously. Some people are boring and stick in the mud about it, and we tell as many dirty jokes about it as we possibly can.
We tell a lot of jokes.
Robbie?
Nerdonomicon is actually an evolution from my first podcast, which was called Lords of the Polygon Table. But what we do with Nerdonomicon is we kind of dive deep into a lot of things that are going on in pop culture, whether it be movies, TV shows. We do a lot of streaming shows. We discuss them, and sure, we rank them and whatnot, but we try to talk a little bit more about what goes on behind the scenes, what kind of impact it has culturally. You know, everything from Wonder Woman to Stranger Things. You know, is the show any good? Roseanne, yeah. Is the show any good? Is the movie any good? And, you know, what does it bring to the table? What does it mean for us culturally? And Roseanne is actually a good example, you know, especially with that pilot episode. So that's what we try to do with Nerdonomicon. And it's actually kind of funny because I think two other shows have actually been incepted this weekend, so.
Nice.
Yeah, when we do this next year, there's going to be more. A longer list.
Nice.
Probably for you as well.
Yeah, oh yeah, for sure. So I started podcasting about 4 years ago. Like a lot of people who get into podcasts, I was into Kevin Smith and a lot of the stuff he does, and he's a huge podcast guy. He's got his own network, so I thought, I want to do that. Like, I like talking to my friends about the things I like to talk about. Why not record it and put it out for other people to listen to? So I started Back Issues Comic Book Podcast. That was what the podcast originally started with. We went about 165 episodes before I decided to rebrand it. And the rebranding was only because I wanted to try to reach a bigger audience. I like talking about comics and pop culture, but we talk about all kinds of stuff. We talk about science, breaking news, things like that, you know, abnormal, weird things. So we rebranded and we became Hardly Awesome Podcast, which we just put out the 9th episode for. But we've been doing it for 4 years now. The network grew out of the original Back Issues. So my network is BICBP-Radio, which BICBP just stands for Back Issues Comic Book Podcast. And it was kind of cool because it sounded like radio call letters, so I wanted to have that as our thing. And then the network grew. I had a couple people that live out in North Carolina. They do a podcast, some friends I made, and they wanted to be on the network. So I produced their show and put it on the network and on iTunes. There's a couple of guys I know out in California that do a show, so they're on the network. But it's basically almost a Kevin Smith situation. It's me and a bunch of friends that we do a bunch of shows, and I just give them the platform to do it on our network. I love it. It's, 4 years going, and I don't see myself stopping anytime soon.
It's cool. Yeah. I think the biggest hurdle is actually knowing how to actually set up a podcast. So, you know, obviously you need equipment, hardware, but then also you have to have, a space for a website and to upload it so everyone else can get their hands on it.
Let me ask you real quick. How did you guys, like, when you started, what was your setup? What was the start? Because everyone starts differently.
Ours has kind of been the same.
You've seen our setup. It's been the same.
From day one, really?
Yeah.
Really?
Set the Holics is brought to you by my 2015 tax return.
Okay.
So I
react really because he's got the mic set up. He's got the. You have a mixer?
I got 8-channel mixer.
The 8-channel mixer.
Four mics and a couple other things, a couple other inputs.
When I
started off with a crappy mic. I got a better mic about 3 months in after I realized mine sounded like shit next to his because he has a nice mic.
Yeah. When me and my buddy Anthony started Back Issues, I was working at NCCC. In Niagara County in the Writing Center, and he was a student, and he knew that, you know, we were friendly and we wanted to do a podcast. So one day we decided, let's just do it. We'll talk about comics. I brought my laptop in,
to the little study room in the NCCC Writing Center. It was a laptop, a USB mic that was balanced on a book we pulled off the shelf because we didn't even have a mic stand. And it literally went like that for about 2 or 3 months before we started really looking into getting, you know, really good
equipment. Real equipment.
What about you?
On the way back from PAX, probably about 4 years ago, that was when I decided, all right, I've talked about it enough. I definitely want to start up a podcast. And it was originally myself and two other guys. And it was a Yeti Blue microphone on omnidirectional and three of us sitting knee to knee to knee like some sort of weird Wiccan prayer circle. We just set it up that way and we're just sitting there. I'm like, I can touch your knees. This isn't comfortable. And it sounded terrible.
Starting a cult.
It felt like it. It felt like the cult of the Polygon table because it was Lords of the Polygon table back then. It was awkward and it was... We really started moving forward right when it started to get warm, so it was... We're, like, trapped in a closet, sitting really close. I'm like, this is not great. We need to expand this.
Well, the funny thing is,
Aaron and I... So we expanded pretty quickly.
Well, the funny thing is, Aaron and I did start recording at work. I mean, it was the same equipment, but we did start... We worked
late, and so we would be second shift, so by the time we got out, it was, like, 11, 12, so we would just take a conference room, and we'd just go in the conference room, and our bosses didn't care, so we would just go and do that.
Unfortunately, the cleaning people would come through with
every once in a while.
Cleaners.
And it'd be like, it's like, dude, can you just clear off for, like, an extra half hour? There's other things you can clean.
But you have the music playing from the boombox? Did you guys get a soundtrack out of the deal?
That would have been cool. But
I feel like, when you're starting out, that's the thing you look at first is, like, how do you start out? What kind of equipment should I use? And really, it's what can you afford? Because if you ask me, it's you start with what you can afford, start doing what you love, and then you start saving up for what you need.
Absolutely.
And start doing research. You start finding out which mics are good, which recording programs are best, what software to use to help, you know, with your levels and cleaning audio. But my suggestion is always just start. Just start doing it. Use your phone if you want. You know, start. If you really want to do it, just start. The rest you can put together after the fact.
You can start with a phone. You can start with just a microphone, your computer, the software that'll record you.
Yep. You can start as three sweaty guys in a prayer circle. But here's the thing. Like what you said, the sound was not ideal. Mm-hmm. But the experience that I got out of it was invaluable. Mm-hmm. And those first few episodes, they're embarrassing for me to go back and listen to, but... Damn if I didn't learn so much.
You know,
I would never trade that time, ever.
Do you guys ever go back and listen to your first episodes?
No.
I have.
I don't want to.
You cringe, right?
I don't want to.
They are cringe.
When we did our back issues, the comic book one, we had like an NPR intro where we were like speaking very softly. Welcome to Back Issues Comic Book. And it was like the most ridiculous thing. And now, like, we're just friends hanging out doing it. But you do. It's every single time you do it, you just gain more and more experience with it. Figure out where you're comfortable.
I'm proud of our first two because Leonard Nimoy just passed away right before we decided to start our first two. And the first audio I actually recorded was at PAX East before Aaron and I ever sat in the room and did a show. I was like, I was walking up to people like, you've got a Star Trek podcast. You can't listen to it yet because it doesn't exist yet, but it will. And I went around getting a lot of people's opinions on and thoughts on Leonard Nimoy's passing for our second episode. So we did a whole bunch of like little interview style things for
what
that.
What about it? It was the same PAX.
Probably. Just to know you. Yeah, probably. Yeah, it's great how that works.
Yeah.
Well, why don't we just open up, if you guys have any questions whatsoever, just raise your hands.
And also come up so Mike can catch you.
You don't have to come up. Just talk loudly.
We're assuming that everyone here is obviously interested in podcasts. Like, does anyone here already have one that started one or is it looking into doing it?
Yeah. What is it?
It's called Sounding Smart. My name is Julian, by the way. Also is Josh, my roommate.
What's up?
My best friend. We started it a year and a half ago, I think, with our friend Sarah. She's an ex-Army medic a little connoisseur of everything. She has a 100% disability, so she basically spends her time researching and looking into whatever she can find on the internet. And so we kind of came up with this idea where we all have our own interests in certain things, and we're all fairly smart in our own interests, but we don't really know about the other people's things, so we kind of come in and bring different facts and just bounce ideas off of each other and talk about different things, play games. My question would be, I usually do the editing, and I was just wondering, you know, you guys that do the editing, do you have any good tips with that? Because I always find, you know, what I think me and my friends talk about, you know, I think it's all funny and all interesting, you know, but probably people listening to it would not have the same reaction that I would. You know, how do you guys approach the, you know, making sure that you get down to like a solid 40 to 60 minutes instead of, you know, 2.5 hours runtime, you know, because you just start getting into the rhythm talking.
I guess that's the first question, is figuring out what you want your format to be. A lot of my podcasts are very conversational, and it's just kind of we have topics, things we want to address, but it's the conversations will grow from whatever topic we talked about, and that's where I find when it's organic and it doesn't feel like we're trying to stay on topic, because we've had those shows too where it's like, this is what we want to talk about. The conversation goes this way, and there's this feeling of, no, bring it back. I learned to let it go, do its thing, because you'd get some of the most interesting stuff coming out of those shows. In terms of editing, though, you're talking about content then, actually taking out specific, like, what you take out.
I know Dave's, there's plenty of times I've flubbed things, Dave's edited out, we've said things that are totally inappropriate.
We skew it to inappropriate, maybe not nearly as inappropriate as last podcast on the left, but we'll edge close to them in terms of how bad we can get. But sometimes when we've crossed the line into their territory, we will strategically remove that section and sometimes put it at the end of the episode as an outtake.
It's all according to what it is, because sometimes like we'll say something and I'll contact Dave like the day after because I'll think of a conversation and say, could you take that part out?
Because that won't
play well, because if anybody hears it, they could be pissed off or turned off or something.
Yeah, so. But as far as like editing, like the process goes, do you use Levelator?
Levelator? No.
Use Levelator. It is your best friend.
It's free.
It will hug you when you're tired and sleepy. It'll shave hours of time off your edit.
As far as getting those peaks and valleys.
Getting your levels. I mean, you can always, I still normalize it after I do the editing process. But Levelator, even before you start editing for content or for length or anything, Levelator will be your best friend because it used to take me 8 to 10 hours to edit, because half of that time I'd be adjusting peaks and valleys because Aaron and I have very different speaking, and I thought when we got the same mic, it would make things better. But instead of me being quiet, him being loud, I got loud, he got quiet. So Levelator saved me so much time and editing, and now it's just like I'm back up to like 6-7 hours on edits because I'm trying to get better at removing sounds and ums and stuff like that. So.
See, and I feel like for a show like yours where you're presenting specific content, that's necessary, obviously. Mm-hmm. And if that's what you're looking for, to cut specific content out to just make it more concise and put out a specific package. But there's podcasts where the sound, the ticking of your tongue. It stays in because it's just a natural conversation. It's literally like sitting in a room and listening to people talk about whatever they're talking.
There's certain
about.
Ways that you can cut it, other places where you can't.
I feel the same way because my show is kind of like the right between you guys as far as content. I soften those ticks, but I leave a lot of them in. As far as content, because that was originally what your question was editing for content, my suggestion would be keep a notebook with you when you edit. Just write yourself notes and listen and re-listen to the podcast. Once you have it in your regular form, before you really start making those cuts, try to find some of the jokes that you like the best that you're like, oh man, that was great. And then maybe scale back the ones that you don't like. That way you subconsciously find yourself upping your own game to ultimately get to the point where you don't even have to do that anymore. And ask yourself the question, is the focus of your show supposed to be staying on topic, or is going off on your tangents part of the charm for your show? And keep in mind, your audience will eventually find you. You have to market. You know, you have to play that social media game. You've got to be out at conventions talking with people. You've got to throw that business card their way. But your audience will find you. But what is the show you want to make? And then make your content, tailor make your content based on that. If you want to stay on topic, omit more jokes than you keep in. If you like those tangents and you like that humor aspect, and keep more jokes in, maybe scale back the ones that don't land as well as they should, but I can guarantee you subconsciously you will find yourself upping your game because you don't want to edit them anymore. It will happen. It's a natural progression.
And like Chris said, it really just depends on what kind of show that you want to do. I never wanted to do a show where it was 60 minutes and that was it. I wanted it to be as natural as possible.
When you exhaust the subject, you exhaust the subject.
When it's over, it's done. Which is why I like to edit out the ticks and ums and stuff like that, because our shows do run typically over an hour.
When the horse is dead, you kick it one more time.
Yeah, but just to try to get it closer to more manageable for people, I just try to cut out every little silence, every little gap, and it still sounds pretty organic. I mean, I've made cuts and people are like, "You edit this?" And I'm like, "Yes, I spend many, many hours editing this, so hopefully you don't hear it."
And I feel like when it comes time for listenership, also, like they said, they'll find you. You know, like you might want to worry about it in terms of I want to make sure it attracts, but do what you guys do. Do it naturally and let it be what it is. And then just put it out there, promote it, do all the hard work in terms of getting it out there. But the people who are interested in it will come. And they'll continue to come. And they're not going to care if you put out a 60-minute audio this week or 30 or 2 hours. They're going to listen because they like you guys and they like what you have to say.
I can only speak for what my show really does. But what my audience seems to like the most is candor. I've got fans that love the show, but they don't love every single episode we do, but they'll always keep listening because we speak candidly about what we're talking about. May not be the episode for them, you know. You might love Godzilla, but hate Wonder Woman. Well, next week we're doing Wonder Woman. You know, but they'll still tune in because of the candor. Just be true to what you want to do.
That's weird. Everyone loves every episode of my shows.
God knows I love every episode of my shows.
I mean,
I'm a creeper.
That's another thing, though. It's the truth. You put yourself out there, but also be prepared for the negative, the people that are like, that's garbage. You know, that's your choice.
If only we got that kind of feedback.
You can go as macro as you want, but yeah, it's all good.
You had a question, sir?
For somebody who would like to do a podcast just by himself, what would be the good average time length for a podcast, for a person, just a one-man podcast?
I would say,
how long do you like to talk to yourself?
And the content. Well, I would say, what kind of show is it?
Yeah.
Personally, I would say, 15-20 if you're doing a solo show.
Well, that would depend on the show.
But then, have you heard Hardcore History?
No.
Hardcore History is Dan Carlin. He's by himself, and he'll go on for 6 hours.
Without exaggeration.
Yeah. Wow.
And without exaggeration.
And that's just part one.
Yeah. Yeah, look up for Blueprint for Armageddon, which is he talks about World War One. It's absolutely fascinating.
But if you want a great one-off... what was it called? Prophets of Doom.
Prophets of Doom.
That is probably my favorite one. It's a one-off, but it's 4 or 5 hours, and it is brilliantly done.
Yeah, it's really about what you want to say in terms of your content, what you're trying to put out there. I would say as a tip, because there's people who, when they're doing it by themselves, they're not sure how to speak. And what's helped me before when I've had to do it by myself is almost picturing myself speaking to, I'm in a radio station and I'm talking to the people are tuning in, so I know there's ears on me. So I feel like I act like I'm talking to the people out there.
I think it also depends on your frequency. Like if you're going to do a one a day, then I'd probably say 15-20 minutes tops all you would need if you're doing one a day and you're solo. Yeah. If you're talking to people all the time, because that would be your average YouTube style video as well. Yeah. 10 to 15 minutes, nice sweet spot if you're doing something daily. If you're doing something weekly, it might be longer. It also depends on your content as well. And some of us have also started venturing in the YouTube. On Synthaholics, I put up usually a cocktail video a week. I haven't done it in 2 months for personal reasons, but I'm going to get back on that horse soon, I hope.
Yeah, on YouTube I did my Black Panther review, and I think the finished product ended up being somewhere in the vicinity of 12 minutes. When I put it into my editor, I think I spoke for 45, so I cut a heck of a lot out.
Yeah.
But as far as doing a podcast by yourself, the number one thing, and it's always going to come back to this, is your content. What do you want to talk about? I have done several episodes of multiple shows that I've been on by myself, and I've ranged anywhere from around 10 minutes to, I think my longest one was 1 hour 45, and the reason that one was so long is because we had to take a couple of weeks off. My co-host had some personal things, and my wife and I had our kid, and she happened to go into labor during Batman v Superman, so I and again, my show is big on candor. There were some complications with it and everything like that. So I actually spent it, and in my head, I had this idea of what I wanted to do. I wanted to talk about why we've been gone, and I wanted to make a show for my kid so that he can look back when he's, you know, 15, 16, and be like, wow, that's what Dad thought when I was born. And then I happened to review BVS afterwards. And the way I get through talking by myself to myself, ultimately, because essentially I'm just talking into a microphone, is literally I sit in there, I put on sunglasses, and I envision this. I envision a room where I'm talking to people. And I'm also Italian, so I talk with my hands all the time. So I'm literally, what you're seeing me do right now is literally what I do with headphones on in my office when I'm talking by myself.
Except you have pants on.
Not necessarily true. Sometimes I'm full on Winnie the Pooh. Okay.
Let it flow!
Just let it happen. Just let the freedom fly. But that would be my suggestion. Figure out what you want to talk about. And, you know, if you've got an idea, you know, how long do you think you can speak to that subject? Do you want to put in the work to speak about it multiple times, set it up in multiple, you know, multi-episodes, and then make it happen from there? And I can also guarantee you, you're going to hate some of what you do by yourself,
yep.
So you're going to be making those cuts.
And don't be discouraged, too, because absolutely. I'll be honest, I've done, like I said, I have a lot of shows I've done and started, I've helped on. I can't tell you how many of those shows have had 2-3 episode ones. Because we did it over, because we didn't like what happened. And you do it the first time, and you're just like, ugh, I don't know. Don't let that discourage you. Just do it again. See what happens. Don't get to a point, though, where you're just like constantly doing it again. There's going to be a point where you just have to say, I'm going to put it out there. Just put it out.
Yep.
Let it be. Go to the next. I've had after 165 shows of back issues, which technically was actually over 200, because we did like little mini episodes that had nothing to do with back issues. It was like
After Darks.
Every episode.
After Darks.
Where I appeared
and didn't get a.
You're on an unaired, lost episode.
Lost episode.
That would be kind of fun to put out on like an off week for Hardly Awesome.
Yeah.
You were almost on.
I'm looking forward to hearing that, actually.
I haven't even heard it. I'll have to find it.
You were almost on a lost episode for Nerdynomicon, but it was just too fun.
After having done them, you'll have shows where you finish it and you're just like, that was not good. Put it out, go to the next, because the next one will be phenomenal. You'll forget about that.
But the thing is, like, I mean, you'll record an episode, you're like, that was garbage.
Yeah.
And then you listen to it, and it's like, wow, that was a lot better.
It happens all the time. We'll do an episode, and I'll walk away from it, and it's like, that was a terrible episode. And then I'll listen to it, and it's like, wow, that was pretty good. There wasn't anything wrong with that. Why was I so down on myself? You know,
I don't know.
No, I don't know. It's like, it's weird. You don't know why you get so down on yourself over things. So
was a good question, though.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Very good question.
Yeah.
I've never had that one before.
I have a philosophy with podcasts, and it doesn't mean that you have to listen to it, but I think that podcasts should have one or two things. Either you should be an expert in some subject that you're going to be talking about, so you know a lot more than the average person would know, or you are very entertaining as a person to listen to. And if you can do one of those two things or mix those things, I think that's a good cocktail for what people want to hear. So if you have more knowledge than somebody, let's say you're good at, you know a ton about Star Wars, or you know a certain comic book character, and you want to talk about that character, you know, that's perfect, because people will tune in for those things, you know. And if you're entertaining as well, people will tune in for the entertainment.
I wish I had one of those two things going for me.
Yeah, I know.
Just a stick in a bucket.
Well, huh? I really am.
I got the stick, I got the bucket, I'm making the podcast.
It's all luck. See what sticks.
Yes. Basically, throw spaghetti at the wall.
Yes, right. Any other questions?
You have another one?
Yeah. What kind of web service, like Stitcher or Podcast Addict, what do you guys use to get to that? I know one of them is SoundCloud. Another one is.
Personally, I use Libsyn as my podcast. The file, it hosts the file. Mm-hmm. It also manages my RSS feed because I researching it, and I was like, I don't want to manage my own RSS feed every day. I already have to manage my website. I have to put up the, have to update the website every single week for the show. I have to update on Libsyn, and that's a whole thing. It streamlines it, but it's still like, you know, like 15-20 minutes of extra work to do. And then if I didn't have the RSS, and it Libsyn will manage the RSS feed for you. So once you fill in everything on Libsyn, it does it. So yep. it's just one less place for me to have to do things. And there's a couple different tiers of how they handle their service. I'm on like the second one, but it's great. Normally, like I publish to iTunes first because iTunes will usually propagate out to almost everything else. Mm-hmm. Some things that won't, right. Like you still need to sign up for Stitcher. Yep. SoundCloud,
Google Play,
But Libsyn, Libsyn lets you set those up inside of Libsyn, so like you can get those pretty easy. Like back when I started, they weren't built in, so I had to go through them separately. But now I think Libsyn offers it, so you can another plugin for the website you can do.
And it also manages your social media, too. You can just type in what you want to go on Facebook, what you want to go on the Twitters, and boom.
It posts it all at once.
Yeah.
It'll post it to YouTube also. It'll automatically throw it to YouTube if you want to put your stuff on there as well. It's really, really handy. It's worth every penny.
And it gives you analytics, too.
Yes.
So you can see how many downloads you got, where they're coming from. And
The analytics on SoundCloud was a little bit more interesting to me because I could see what countries people were listening from.
Well, for what Libsyn does, too. You have to pay for a higher tier.
Well, screw that.
Like I'm on like the second tier, and I think you got to be up in the third to get like more specific analytics.
Yeah. So screw that.
I had that, and there was nothing wrong with it, but you were paying a lot of money to hold it. Then I decided to create the website for the network. And like I said, I listened to a lot of Kevin Smith podcasts, and for the longest time, he was promoting Squarespace. Check out Squarespace. So I checked it out. Very easy, user-friendly, you know, build a website. But then I found out I could just host all my stuff on their servers. Like, it holds it. So I moved everything over from Libsyn to their servers. Again, you put in your info and it puts it all up for you right away. You know, it's in iTunes. What I like about Squarespace is Squarespace's analytics will actually give you unique subscribers, not just downloads. Because you can have one person subscribe to you, download, you know, three episodes over and over because they used one on their phone, they went on their iPad, and they went on their laptop, and it's the exact same episode. Yeah, you're saying that you got three downloads, but that's not three different listeners. Squarespace will give you analytics in terms of who your actual subscribers are. So they tell you, they won't tell you this is how many episodes they downloaded. They say this is who listened to you each month. So you kind of get a feel for actually how many people are listening to you. So I do like Squarespace in that respect, but Libsyn was very user-friendly as well. It was just more monetary, you know, it's a little more expensive.
Yeah, because they make you, but the higher tiers do give you more space. Like if you're putting out like a stereo podcast, Unsetholics is all mono just to save listeners room on their device. Because, you know, a 2-hour stereo podcast on like Star Wars Episode 8, because we go long-winded when there's a big group of us. That's like, you know, almost 200 megs, and stereo, and in mono it's only like, you know, a third of that.
Yep.
So I mean, it's also good to think of your listeners and what kind of device they have, how many gigs they have on their phone, and so if you can make the file smaller for them, there's very few instances where stereo is even really needed.
I don't think there's audio files listening to podcasts going, it's not that good.
Right.
The quality
right.
needs to come up a little.
I think there's some podcasts that go for horror that may want the left and right channel for certain things, but for like a talk show like we do, there's no reason to do stereo.
The one podcast I listened to, the guy that hosted, and his voice level would go from loud to quiet back to loud for some reason, but the guy that he's like interviewing is like always constant.
He's moving away from his mic, probably.
He's probably getting animated doing this.
And I do that personally as well, as I've shown you even just talking here. But he's not leveling his sound waves properly.
Or he's doing this.
Yeah, Levelator will take care of that.
Oh my God.
That takes people who are talking too low, it brings them up. People too loud brings them down, and everyone's basically on the same level.
Exactly.
Yeah, Levelator's wonderful.
Levelator's the best. It'll save you time.
It saves a lot of time.
Do you guys use certain software to clean, like, room noise, the hiss in the room?
Compressors.
No.
We have compressor mics.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we use compression right on the board.
Okay.
Because,
again, there's people, like, if you can't afford it, you don't have those. There's programs that help you clean that stuff.
Audacity does. Stuff.
Yes.
SoundForge
does it. You can
Audacity guys
clean.
Right there?
Yeah.
Oh, I love it so much.
Yeah, I usually... I have a MacBook, so I usually edit in GarageBand. Then I'll throw it through. I'll throw it through Levelator. Mm-hmm. Then I'll edit it in GarageBand. Then I'll throw it through Audacity to normalize it.
Yeah.
And I've tried to use it for MFS a couple times, but I mostly don't have to.
Yeah, the reason I brought up the cleaning is because if you use Levelator to level your audio, you'll want to do that before you clean the room.
Yeah, yes. Well, Levelator's
all
the
of
first
a sudden
thing.
You clean the room hiss, you'll do Levelator after, and this is something after you know you, do it, you realize not to do it. You'll hear when it's level, those people that were brought up, their hiss got brought up too, and it didn't get taken out. So
Yeah, that's the first step before you do anything is Levelator.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's one we've never really used for the cleaning. I've always just gone straight through Audacity.
Yeah.
And, you just leave like a 10-second period of quiet, and it just takes the background noise right out.
Yep.
That's usually the first thing I do, but it's good to know that Levelator will actually...
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that, whatsoever, but Levelator will save you so much time.
It's a time saver. That's really what I use it for.
When you start finding yourself, when you're listening back going, oh, I wish they sat closer to the mic,
mm-hmm.
throw it in Levelator and you're good.
Or just make it a habit, do it first thing every single time, and then keep your 10 seconds in there. Because like I said, if it brings up their hiss, you keep the 10 seconds in there so you can use Audacity to remove it.
Yep.
But just always use Levelator first, and you should be golden.
Now, Levelator, you like clean up your level for any type of recording, like if you're doing like a let's play on something or.
Yeah, any audio you throw into it, it sits there and it tries to put the sound really close together. So, like, everything will be a consistent volume throughout.
Yeah.
But I still normalize it just to make sure nothing peaks too hard.
Mm-hmm.
So, throw it through Levelator first and then normalize it?
Oh, no. Throw it through Levelator, edit it how you want it to be done, and then I normalize it.
Yep. Any other questions?
Anybody? So you guys have a podcast. Are you the only ones? Anybody else have one? Or looking to start one? Interested in it?
Yeah, I'm definitely looking to start one. I've been doing some research into it. Like the website you guys made. I can't remember.
Libsyn. Yeah, Libsyn.
Mm-hmm. I looked into that and I'm like, but it doesn't seem like it's that much to start out.
No. Yeah, I mean, they've got cheap plans. And even the cheapest plan will give you enough automation to get started.
Yep.
Just the higher plans give you more storage. Like I said, if you want to do a stereo podcast for whatever reason, and you release every single day, you know, the more, because it's monthly. So like I've got like 250 gigs a month, and now that I switched to, I was originally doing stereo, and now I switched to mono. Like I don't even get close to my cap ever.
Also looking to, I mean, you don't have to break the bank, but looking to buying a decent mic, you know, at least spend. Oh, it was 100-something
bucks. What about like a gaming, like a Razer or something?
Ideally,
it's
no.
Passable audio, but I wouldn't recommend it for long-term. Not if you really want to make a go at it. The audio is passable.
First couple until you save up to get it, sure. Because, I mean, like, there's been times, like, Aaron and I record remote, even though we both live, it's just not as easier to record remote. And my device that lets me hook my computer to my mixer, the Griffin iMic, it died after 2.5 years of using it every single week. That hardware piece died. And I used a headset, like a really nice Mad Catz headset. It's like a $200 headset. I sound like I was in a tin can next to him.
Really?
Yeah, because like, he had a snowball. It's a high-quality USB mic, and probably it was like half the cost of my headset, but since it's a mic and just the mic and not a headset too, it recorded sound a million times better than a headset could.
You're looking at Snowballs. I think you can get them on Amazon for 60, 70 bucks.
I think you're 60, yeah.
Yeah, and they're decent. They really, for what they are, it's just a big ball with a little tripod. You plug it into your computer. It's perfect.
Yeah.
Especially if that's what you're thinking about doing.
If you're going to do remote, yeah, that would be
it. Well, even if you're doing it on yourself. You're just recording in front of your laptop or whatever, you know. It's perfect. Just get a great, great audio quality of it. So.
Yeah. Would Blue Yetis be a good mic for that?
That was the mic that I started out with.
Okay.
And I'm going to be honest with you. I still use it to this day, depending on the recording type that I do. I never recommend sticking just with USB. If you have XLR, it gives you a lot more versatility. But I'm going to be honest, I love it. I absolutely love it. The sound is very customizable.
Yeah. Either any of those should work. And you know, and the thing is, even if you get an XLR mic, there are interfaces so you can that'll convert your XLR to USB, so you can use an XLR mic on your computer. It's not too bad. It's going to raise the cost a lot because XLR mics are going to be a little bit more expensive than your Blue Yeti or your Snowball, and then the interface will probably cost as much as your Snowball. Like it's $100-something probably for a good interface. Remember that? What computer? Whatever you have, whatever you have. I like using my Mac because I used it for video editing before, and I like GarageBand. Some people hate it, but I'm just used to it. Like I have no idea how to use Audacity for editing. It would probably drive me insane because I'm so used to using what I use. But starting off, whatever you have. I mean, you don't need a super powerful computer for audio editing. It's pretty just low of, maintenance.
Just think of space, though, because if you're planning on archiving your stuff, keeping your any of your episodes
buy an
after
external
the fact,
hard drive.
You're going to need an external for sure. Yeah, I had to
put them
onto
DVDs.
Had to go from like a 500 gig to a 2
Blu-ray, dude. It holds
4 terabyte.
Yeah. I mean, I archive my stuff too, and like I've been.
I keep everything. I keep the project file, the raw file, the finished audio.
Yeah, I keep it all too, and so like I do that, and I have a 128 gig MacBook Pro, and I've been fighting to do my podcast the last month because I've not been home and I'm staying at a friend's place, and so all I had was my laptop, and like fighting to for because the raw files like you know like a gig or two, and then you convert it to use Levelator so it makes a copy of it. And then you put it into your editor, and the editor makes a copy of it so you can work on editing it.
Yep.
So, like, I was struggling to put up the podcast this last month.
So, yeah, so whatever computer or laptop you do choose to use, you may have to look into external hard drives as well just for holding, you know, your
yeah, data. I mean, you may not want to buy one immediately because, I mean, there is Podfade. Some people, like, who start, like, they think that they're going to like it, and they just don't. They fade after, like, 10, 15 episodes.
Yep.
So there's no point in dropping, like, you know, $100 on a good, you know, 4-terabyte hard drive if you don't know you're going to... But, like, you know, once you've made it past 10, 15, 20 episodes, then it's like, yeah, I can... You know, and you still feel good about it, then definitely invest in an external hard drive so you can keep, you know, your unedited file, your RAW, and all that stuff, just in case you need to go back to it for whatever reason.
And I do recommend personally keeping those RAW files as well. If it becomes something that you really want to be serious about and really want to make a business out of, you're going to want those RAW files if you end up getting sponsorship or something like that. That way you can...
Edit anything that needs... Because let's be honest...
Not only edit, but you can also bring in commercials and you can start doing things what they call advertising legacy.
That's true.
So once you start getting new subscribers, you can pay a little, charge a little bit more for advertising legacy. Put in a commercial that went back 4 or 5 years to your very first episode.
Yeah.
Now you've got a brand new subscriber that's binging everything that you've got. You can charge a little bit more for that as well.
Yep.
But, I mean, we're talking further down the road. But it's a good idea to always keep that in the back of your mind. If you love it, and you want to make something of this, keep those RAW files.
Yeah, for sure.
Keep them.
Also, it's fun like to have stuff that you didn't put out in the episode. You have all this extra stuff that when you B-roll? when you grow a list, an audience, it's stuff that they're hungry for. I mean, we're all here because we're huge fans of whatever's here. Anime, comics, celebrities, whatever it is. And we're all hungry for that stuff that's not normally available. Can you give me something that's rare? Some audio I've never heard before? Yeah, you know what I mean? So it's nice to hold on to that stuff, too, for that respect.
Yeah, definitely.
I was going to bring this up because I know this is a big thing when it comes to doing your own show, starting your own show. Music. You always think to yourself, what do you want to do for theme music? What do you guys do when it comes in terms of getting music for a show?
You contact the creator and get permission.
So what do you mean when you say creator? Like you found somebody that's a musician and said, hey, can you make this? Or you found one of their songs and said, I want to use that?
I did that. Okay. Warp 11 is people, they're a Star Trek rock band. And they sing songs that are raunchy at times and downright funny. And it's all Star Trek themed. Like, they make Star Trek things into sex euphemisms, and they're fantastic. And I reached out to their singer, and I was like, hey, you know, I'm starting a podcast. I've heard your music on other Star Trek podcasts. I think your sense of humor and the humor we want to bring to our podcast is... you know, matches up really well. It's an RF if we use your music on our show.
Jesus, dude, can we get a transcript of that?
you really want staff's permission for any music you use that's, like, not, you know, that's licensed, because you can get shut down. Like,
yeah.
On YouTube, some of our stuff has been stricken for copyright. Like it'll still play, but like other people are monetizing it because of Warp 11. Even though we got permission, like their label or whatever doesn't know, because I just got personal permission from like the guy. And so they're monetizing on some of my videos, right, because of their songs. But like, I'm not in any legal trouble because I spoke with the band themselves, and so they're not going to shut me down. But I mean, some people say it's fair use, but I've heard arguments where it's not.
Right.
So I would always err on the side of caution. And if you're going to use any music, contact the creator and just make sure it's okay.
Or talk to one of your musician friends.
Yeah. Because our intro now is provided by one of Darren's friends.
Is that how you did it? You did what's his name? Adrian, do your music?
Yeah. That's how Adrian became my co-host. As you know, a thank you, I had him on Polygon Table. We just clicked really well together. We had a good back and forth. And when everybody else that was on Polygon Table started to go their other ways, you know, I can't really commit every week to doing a show. Adrian stuck around, and the rest is history. Now he's my official co-host. We've never met in real life, but he's become one of my best friends. But yeah, he's the composer for all the projects I do.
Nice. For myself, I did, for some of my shows, I did it myself. I composed the music and did it myself. But for some of them, sometimes I don't have the time, and it's like I don't want to sit down and try to figure out the sound or the feel for this new show I'm putting together. I found there's a site on YouTube. It's free music that all kinds of composers put stuff up there. All they want you to do is give them credit in your notes, your show notes. So YouTube is actually, for copyright free and free use music, is actually a good source to find
very good source
stuff. Yeah, I think it's called Free Audio Library under YouTube. It's great. There's all different kinds of genres of music that you could choose from. You listen to something and you feel like you like it. You don't have to contact it. You use it. Just make sure you put the credit in there, and you're good to go. No worries. No money.
That's cool. And there's other website services too,
sure.
or some like monthly pay for this or that. But free is best. Permission is better, because I love Warp 11's music. I'm a big fan of theirs now. So.
Nice.
The upside about the free music or asking permission is lots of times built-in subscribers, because they want to know what their music is being associated with.
True.
And if they really like you, then
they'll
stick it out with you.
Yeah, my music's on.
Have them on as a guest.
As a matter of fact, one of my subscribers, and I know for a fact he still subscribes because I still correspond with him, is one of the members of Imagine Dragons.
Oh, nice.
Because I originally asked for the rights to use Geeks Will Inherit the Earth as my theme song for Lords of the Polygon Table. The label flagged me for copyright, and it got taken down from SoundCloud, which is when I switched over. But he still corresponds with me every once in a while and kind of gives me feedback. So, yeah, always ask permission. You never know what kind of people you're going to talk to, meet, develop relationships and friendships with.
And you can always ask them to come on your show, too. Especially
Absolutely.
if they're in the same genre as you. Since they're a Star Trek band, we've had him on twice.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been great conversations. Although, it's just kind of funny because he's a musician and he does interviews. And so, like, the first time we had him on, he was throwing us a lot of canned things I'd heard before.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, you know, 45 minutes in, we start talking about D&D. He opened, like, right up. So, like, you know, if you can find other stuff they're into, that definitely helps open them up and make them more willing to talk.
Yeah, some of the funnest times I've ever had is when I've had special guests on the show. Because, damn, you can develop some really cool friendships with people you never thought you would.
Yeah.
But we're at the 4:45, so I think we're supposed to be wrapping up about this time. Thank you all for showing up.
Yeah,
I really appreciate the audience and the feedback and the questions. It's been fantastic getting to hear from you guys and your thoughts and everything.
Yeah. If you guys want to talk about it anymore, my network's at table 420, so come by and say hi, and we'll talk more podcast stuff.
And for some
I'm
going to
be up there as well. And for the record, no, we did not pay extra for that number. It just kind of happened.
It was a sign. Aaron's got a table also, Numina Comics.
Yeah.
If you want to talk to me about
Artist
Alley. His artwork, go check it out over there.
And I'm a free floater.
Walking around.
That's
he's a Rolling Stone.
The man on the street. Getting comments from me. But yeah, stop by the booth if you have any more questions or want to talk or any interests. I mean, it's cool to talk to people. We love talking to people.
Absolutely.
It's the second year that my network got a table at this
Con, and this year, man, last year we got a table in Artist Alley because originally we were stuck off somewhere, and I'm friends with one of the people putting this on, and so they were like, Ken Lashley dropped out, you want his table? It's like, sure. So we set up there, and we had a few people stop by, but not too much. This year, man, there's a lot of people interested in podcasts. Like, it's getting bigger and bigger, so we've had some people come by. Come over and talk if you'd like, and we get more into more stuff.
Yeah.
So before you guys go, would you guys be interested in next year if we did, like, an actual live podcast? Would that be interesting, or would you rather it, or would you rather something more like this?
Might as well record it.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, you know, honestly, we were trying to figure out a way to be able to stretch a little bit longer because, you know, we've all done panels like this before, like how did we get into it, you know, where to go from there. And especially if you guys are going to be here next year, we'd love to be a little bit more than just, well, this is what you do to start out with, you know, see what we're all about. Do a live show. We collaborate with each other all the time.
The collaboration with all these podcasts, we have this thing called Nerds of the Roundtable, with a K, Nerds. Basically it's members of each of these podcasts get together to discuss the stuff we all like to talk about. So, I mean, that'd be something we could easily do for the con.
Yeah, we could do one of these for the con, but we just didn't know what the interest would be, so we thought in under 45 minutes, we thought it'd just be best for more, like, interactive, like, get questions and stuff. But next year we could do a live show. Would that be a lot of fun?
That'd be cool.
Our last Nerds Around Table was episode 8. And that is on Synthaholics. So if you want to hear all of us get together and talk about Star Wars and me be very angry.
That was
The Last Jedi? Yeah.
That was a very dangerous episode. It strained our friendship.
Yeah.
I loved it.
As divisive as it was.
It was pretty funny. The gamut on that went from, like, love to, like, to me, where I hated it. So it was a lot of fun. A lot of fun running the gamut. And the hopes are we'll get together for Solo.
That is the hope, yes.
And behind the scenes, it'll be on
every night for over 4 months. We all actually do talk. We're all very close friends. Every night for like 4 months.
Arguing.
He would start out our conversation. So here's what's wrong with episode 8.
Here's another meme. Here's another
really?
Meme. Here's another meme. It was like, God.
It's wrong.
No,
Dave will let it go.
Thanks for coming out, guys.
I chowed the
definitely.
It's
thank
nice
you
to
very
see
much.
That the interest is coming up more and more. So, yeah. Is your guys' stuff on iTunes? Like, what are you guys on? Just SoundCloud?
SoundCloud right now.
Okay.
Have you jumped off to anything else?
No, not yet. We took a hiatus. We actually just moved to Buffalo, and our third co-host is still out in Binghamton.
Oh, okay.
So we're kind of working out the logistics of being able to kind of get her to, like, do a... you know, a phone message or record or whatever.
Skype works pretty well.
Yeah,
we're going to try and figure out kind of the Skype logistics to do that, and then hopefully we had a webcam.
Let us know what's your podcast.
Binghamton. I have remembrances of Binghamton.
Binghamton,
that was a fun city.
Awesome. Thanks for coming out, guys.
Seriously. Skype.
Okay. Yeah. We're going to hopefully get that back up.
Yeah, definitely. Anytime I hear about a podcast, I want
just
to
just don't even think about it anymore. Just start.
Just do it.
Yeah, when you want to do yours, do it.
Just like Nike. Just do it.
For me, it feels like there might be too many of them, so it's like the one, because I'm a huge wrestling fan.
Dude, it doesn't matter. I was doing a comic book podcast. Do you know how many comic book podcasts there are? You just can't care. You just got to do it because somebody's going to say, I like your version better than that version.
We're not even very specific on ours. We're just pop culture and nerd culture as a whole. We've tried to focus it down on what we enjoy talking about. But do you know how many of those there are?
Yeah.
But we have thousands of people each and every week that tune in specifically for our take.
Yeah.
Our
Star Trek podcasts there are. Yeah. There are so many Star Trek. We are struggling to get numbers, but we do it because we enjoy it.
Yeah,
and we love collaborating. We like doing other stuff too. So.
And when you find even your first listener that you don't know personally that reaches out to you, I'm telling you right now, I burst into tears. It is such a humbling feeling to
you
have somebody.
Burst into tears?
I did.
The first time I had a listener that came to me that didn't know me but realized, oh my God, that's you? All of a sudden, they turned into, she was a fangirl, and she couldn't come near me, and it was like, she started crying, and I was like, this is weird. What's happening? Like, she was literally crying because she was like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, it's you. It is.
Well, I haven't had that.
Yeah, yeah.
Calm down.
I haven't gotten fangirled on.
A second. But yeah, just do it, man. Just put it out there, and it doesn't matter. You want to talk wrestling? Talk wrestling. I have two shows on my network that are wrestling. One's an old one, Dusty Finish, where these two guys talk about old pay-per-views, and they just riff on it and make fun of some of it, because when you look back on it, it just doesn't hold up. There's another one where it's all up to date, you know, updating WWE, what's going on in Raw, SmackDown, and it's just a weekly wrap-up kind of a thing. But trust me, there's like millions of podcasts out there. You can't let that stop you. Do what you want to do. Put it out there. You're going to get people that are
listening. What you love. Yeah. That's important, because if you don't like it, then
why do it?
They can tell.
Exactly.
Right.
Listeners can tell if you're not passionate about the thing. I mean, like, me and Aaron might not be the only Star Trek podcast out there, but damn it, we're passionate and we're crazy, and we tell as raunchy jokes as we can feel like we can get away with the Star Trek audience. And I think that's what's actually hurting our numbers. Like Star Trek.
The raunchy jokes?
Yeah, because
stop having me on as a guest.
Star Trek people are just very straight laced, a lot of them, and they're very like, it needs to be this way. And like, maybe they think we're disrespectful of the property, but we love it so much, we geek out about it. So, I mean, like, you know, people that have stuck with us, you know, they know we love it, so.
Awesome. Thanks for coming out, guys.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
Thank you
so
very much.
Thank you.
Well, we hope you enjoyed that rundown of what we did at the con.
Aren't you exhausted?
I am so tired.
Do you want to go home and sleep?
Yes.
Get into your bed.
Oh.
So we had a great time. We've. I'm
ambient.
Yeah. Oh, you could do that. I'm just gonna drink myself silly.
I want to drink myself silly. That'll be fun.
Yeah, so we had a good time. We were at the Numina table. I sold a bunch of Return to Snakeland.
Return to Snakeland, woo!
Yeah, my graphic novel's out. Sold a bunch of those. We've got some of our Nickel City sampler for Numina Comics and our characters, so that was cool. It's been a great time. We got to see a lot of old friends. We got to see
So many people from our old job.
Old work people, and we got to see, you know, I got to meet a lot of new people too, so that was fun too. So I love meeting new people.
Yeah,
so
met some new vendors who are real cool.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody has been fun, everyone's been great, and Nickel City Con is a beautiful, successful time we had together.
Absolutely. Can't wait for next year's.
Me too.
Woo!
Well,
you can find our music from Warp 11, and except for our intros provided by Dave Wilkes. The show you can find at setthaholics.com or on YouTube at youtube.com/setthaholics. You can email us at setthaholics@yahoo.com. And join the Facebook group, facebook.com/group/setthaholics.
And you can find us on Twitter.
Yeah, at setthaholicduo. I'm at David_J_Duncan. And Aaron's at Blackbird2004. And Holly, which you didn't hear on here, unfortunately.
She has been here in spirit. She's been around.
Yeah. She missed most of the con, but she was here some today.
Yes.
I don't know where she is right now, but she is at Lunar Thistle, so you'll be hearing her soon, I'm sure.
Absolutely. And please go to the Apple iTunes, rate and review us. 5 stars would be wonderful.
Review!
Give us a nice little a comment in the comment sections what you think of us. We appreciate that. Also, if you can, go to Patreon.com/Synthaholics. Throw a buck our way to keep the podcast coming and help grease the giant wheels of podcasts rolling your way every week. And lastly, the great way to support our podcast is word of mouth. Please tell people about Synthaholics. Let them know if they like Star Trek, sci-fi, any of that stuff. It's a great podcast, and have fun listening to us and enjoy cons like this one.
Yeah, I hope you enjoyed this special Synthaholics con episode. See you guys next time.
Bye.
Woo!
Before the night's over, I'll puke in the sink, and we'll cry till we laugh, and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend.